Welcome to Sports Girls Podcast, brought to you by sportstalk.ie. Check out gemevents.ie, candy carts, chocolate fountains, selfie mirrors. We got all your party needs covered at gemevents.ie. healthandfitnessireland.net. We put you back in control of your health, fitness, nutritional and well-being needs through education, advice and motivation. Check out healthandfitnessireland.net. Looking to dance the night away? Check out thelols.ie, the perfect sound for your next wedding, party or function. Great set lists, lively and sure crowd pleasers. TheLols.ie.
So with regards to the campaign 2020 that was launched earlier this week, Show Your Stripes, Can't See, Can't Be initiative, you know, what are your thoughts on that campaign itself, what they're trying to do by 2020 and increasing participation and involvement?
Well, I thought it was a fantastic initiative when they explained what it was. The name isn't very self-explanatory, but when you begin to in between the lines and you look at the numbers that they're suggesting that they're trying to achieve, it becomes very obvious what the whole campaign is about. And I suppose ever since it was launched on Monday, it's always seen on Twitter, maybe that's just my feed in particular. But I think that they really hit their targets this week in particular. It's just a case of, keep that going for the next 2 years. They've got the right people involved. They've got some really well-known faces involved. It's just a case now of actually achieving their goals, and achieving their goals, they're quite, I suppose, tangible goals, and it's just a case of how are they actually going to do it. But if they can keep up the momentum that they've gained this week, they'll be doing very well.
From, I suppose, the development of this concept to where it needs to go, you know, how do you look at that happening?
Yeah, you do have to ask the question, outside of this fantastic marketing campaign, what strategies do they have in place to achieve the 20%? It is a short time frame to achieve such a huge percentage increase. So, you know, what else are they doing behind the scenes? You know, from reading up on it and having watched the ads and so on, they have a research-based format, which is fantastic. So once you start with research, you're definitely going in the right direction. As Lauren already mentioned, they have the right people, the right organisations talking in the one room. And I think that's key for this. You know, Mary O'Connor, the spearhead of the campaign, she's the CEO of the Federation of Irish Sport. She identified their aim of unifying all the national governing bodies. Because we are aware, you know, there are great things being done at grassroots in different places around the country. But bringing them all together now, you know, I think that's definitely a brilliant strategy that they've put in place. So more like that, the strong sponsorship. There's big names there, Lidl, who we're all familiar with in Gaelic circles, AIG, KPMG, they're all hard hitters in terms of backing. So you'd see that whatever they do have in place going forward, they have the finances for it. And just top women in sports spearheading it, you know, it really is exciting, even in its infancy, and it does look very, very promising. So yeah, and just in terms of their ambassadors, I suppose, one of their aims is to highlight that there's a range of sports to choose from so that this participation percentage can go up across the board. But looking at their ambassadors, you know, Sarah Rowe, who we're familiar with, Louise Quinn would be the ambassador. She's soccer background. And, you know, Louise plays international soccer for Ireland and so on. But, you know, you might have thought, right, well, she's playing her club soccer in the UK. Would it have been more, you know, a bit better to get somebody who perhaps plays in the League of Ireland to raise the profile of the League of Ireland? Yeah, just little things like that. You know, of course, we're always going to be critical of different things, but I just think across the board, fantastic initiative with definitely the right people behind it. You know, you have Sarah Keane there, who's the president of the Olympic Council of Ireland. I think she's heavily involved. Sarah Colgan and Heather Thornton, they are co-founders of a company, Along Came a Spider. They're a fantastic production company. So, you know, whatever they do in terms of video and marketing, they're definitely going to nail that as they have done. Which is what are the strategies behind that? So hopefully we'll see now in the near future.
Yeah, and then, you know, from your point, Lauren, with, you know, in terms of media and, I suppose, being out and about, what do you think are the short-term timelines that they should be looking at to achieve this?
Well, I suppose, from a games perspective, looking ahead to next year, I think it needs to, the approach of just putting a very short match report together for the sake of it after a game, more pre-game analysis, in-depth interviews, team announcements, coverage of the game as it happens, and obviously going to some analysis happens after the game. This idea of, oh, we need people to turn up at matches before we give them the coverage that they want. Like, how are we going to get people going to go for matches if they don't know the players, if they don't know the stories behind the players, if they don't know, so this team has come from Division 3 and not in Division 1, and that's the extra bit of interest to go to the game. Like, you're not going to get 40,000 people to randomly turn up at a 40 match next year if we have a complete interest to build that kind of number. So I think that has to come from the media organisations themselves.
You know, during the launch, Rena Buckley told a story about her experience in a club and a medal presentation night. Nadine, have you ever come across anything like this before? Have you experienced it? And, you know, Lauren, the same for yourselves. Have either of you experienced something like this?
No, thankfully not. It was, incredible story for all the wrong reasons. I've never come across it. However, in saying that, I suppose any time I was asked to present anything, or even friends of mine were asked to present any medals, it was always to the girls' team. From my own experience, I would never have seen or heard of, these are my own clubs I'm talking about within my own county, lady athletes or GA people presenting to boys. With that said, I mean, this is incredible, you know, and Rena said at the end, she said, you know, we're looking for a massive shift now, and for me, that's not a massive shift. I think that's just not a massive shift needed in that club anyway. I think that's an example of deplorable bad manners on behalf of that club. So narrow-minded, extremely rude on a personal level. You know, Rena was taking time out of her very busy life job to come down and present these medals, and to be thrown that before 5 minutes beforehand. I think she was very gracious to resist walking out. But you'd have to ask the question, like, who made that decision? And who was allowed to make that decision? Was it the club? Was it one person in the club? Was it a request from some parents, possibly? I suppose to highlight too, you'd hope that this was a rare occurrence, but the fact that it has even happened once, I think it's just disgraceful, to be honest. It really, really is.
And have you, Lauren, come across anything like this, or?
Unfortunately, I've never been asked to present any medals yet. The time has yet to come. But I've never seen a female athlete present medals to males. And I think this would have been a fantastic starting point for something like that. And who better than Rena Buckley, 18 All-Ireland medals. She's in a league of her own completely. There's no male GAA player that's even come close to that. So I think it was a real opportunity lost. Because again, it's an under-12 boys team, under-14 girls team. Like, first of all, what does that show the under-14 girls? If Rena has won 18 All-Ireland medals, she's in a league of her own, and she's standing in the corner while some man from the club presents the boys. And then, from the boys' perspective, they're 11 and 12 years of age. Like, that would have been the perfect starting point for those younger lads to see, well, the girls are just as equal as the boys here. So I think it was a real opportunity lost in that club. And again, and I don't think that struck me straight away, was exactly who made this call. Was it the boys themselves? Was it their parents? Was it someone in the club? So I think they have an awful lot to answer for. And as you said, she is such a gracious person. I think it's very much in her personality that, unfortunately, she would have just sucked it up and gone on with it. If it was someone else, maybe they mightn't have done that.
Yeah,
exactly. But I think it is something that women are facing in the day to day, in all aspects, in both playing, in maybe refereeing, in administration. I've experienced it myself. I've a couple of years ago, I spoke, and I was the only woman that spoke for the 3 days, and I think that was met with a little bit of resistance.
That was at the GAA Congress. Was it?
Yes, so at the GAA Congress 3 or 4 years ago at this point, I would have spoken on behalf of the youth forum, and it was myself and 3 boys, but over the entire weekend, my music and workshops and presentations and motions and everything in between, I was the only woman that spoke. I was only 19 at the time, so I was quite proud of myself. Yeah. But even, I just felt there was a little bit of, I don't know, was it hostility? I'm not sure exactly what the right word is to use. From maybe even my own delegates and my own county board, who I know personally, but I kind of felt like they thought, oh, it's great that Lauren's here, but what are you doing up on the stage? Like, I should be up there, maybe you shouldn't be up there. So I guess that's my own experience of maybe something along the lines of this.
So it seems like that there's like almost a limitation, or, you know, a border or a box that, you know, you shouldn't be trying to get out of, or, you know, to break in terms of the expectation for women in the GA, maybe.
I think so, and I don't know, is it maybe that they feel threatened or something? Which I don't know, it's hard to say.
I'd say, Lauren, it potentially could come down to just change. You know, a lot of people, I suppose, organisations with a very strong culture and tradition don't like change. You know, to top that off then, this week, Cora Staunton, she launched her book Game Changer on Thursday night. And, you know, that's breaking down boundaries as well. Have you read any of the articles or any of the releases?
And yeah, I'm really excited, you know, to read the book. I have been reading a few of the extracts. She has definitely gained the publicity, but will it open the door for other people or other female athletes to possibly go down the same direction? And hopefully, but you know, you look at it, it comes down to money, I suppose. If the book's successful, the publishing company may be interested in approaching other people. And you look at other books that have come before this in regards to the ladies' football, Relentless, was a fantastic read. Mary White also wrote that. Really inspirational, based on the Cork lady footballers. I suppose I loved it personally because of the humility and the humbleness and the respect of others that the Cork girls showed, and how much they achieved as a team. I mean, it really was an incredible read. So I suppose, will we get the same in this book from Cora? You know, will it be as inspirational for young girls to read, and will it get the right messages across? And I think if it does, then there's definitely opportunities there for other female athletes to do the same. I suppose part of the book that have been released this week, and she discussed on the Late Late Show last night around Humperdy, and brought it up, were the areas addressing her sexuality that she felt the need to talk about this. She said that she found homosexuality very difficult to understand as a young person being from rural Ireland. But now she no longer worried about what people might assume. She felt it important to address this as a straight woman for any young girls growing up who might be struggling in any area of their life, as she herself found this difficult. I personally would find this a bit, I felt there was a bit of a mixed message, and I think she had the opportunity to maybe address it in a better manner. I just felt that it actually sent a mixed message to young girls who might be struggling in any area, because she felt that she would have loved to be able to go to socialise with gay friends and gay bars, but as she goes there, she feels the rumour mill will go into overdrive, so they all go to straight bars. I just find this very mixed, that, you know, basically saying, so what she's not saying is, we shouldn't care about what people say. Even though I'm not gay, it would be perfectly acceptable if I was, and don't be afraid. But the message I got was, well, I don't go to gay bars with my friends in case somebody thinks I'm gay, or in case a rumour gets out that I'm gay. So for me, it kind of sends out a negative message to any young person who might be struggling. But, you know, on that, I suppose she went through other interesting topics this week. You know, there was a bit of insight into, she looked at her own way she plays on the pitch and how she deals with her teammates. So it's really interesting, and I think there will be a lot of great stories that come out of it. So hopefully it's a success, and hopefully it'll pave the way for other people to do the same.
Is there anyone in Camogie or in Gaelic football that you think really would have a good story to tell also?
Anne Downey, I think, would be a fantastic book to read as a female bunch door.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant. Her,
like, even looking back to her playing days, I think she'd have a fantastic story to tell. But again, I think it definitely will go off the back of how successful Cora is going to be from a financial point of view as well. So yeah, hopefully that goes well for her.
Yeah, and then, like Lauren as well, you're doing a special preview for the Camogie All-Stars that are coming up. You're doing that for Sports Talk this week.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the All-Stars. They're happening on November 3rd. it's very hard to tell who's actually going to come away with the awards that night. I'm just looking here at the nominations, and like, there's so many really, really impressive players across the board there. And I'm really... quite, I suppose, broad number of counties that have met the shortlist.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, there's a huge number of counties that have made the shortlist, as you say, and I think that's a credit, you know, to maybe counties that don't happen to be in an All-Ireland final, as we'll see with, you know, maybe the ladies' football nominations.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose, like, definitely the two strongest teams met the final, and there probably is a little bit of a gap there between those and the rest.
Yeah.
But we do still see some phenomenal players on those teams, but at the end of the day, they would really rather to be winning those All-Ireland with their teammates. But this is a nice kind of end-of-year nod. So yeah, there's a huge spread of players there. Even like this girl that didn't even make the knockout stages that are getting selections for nominations.
Yeah,
so it's going to be interesting. It'll be hard as well, I suppose, for them to whittle it down. With the likes of Cork and Kilkenny being so strong, and who will they pick from those? And then will we actually see some representation from those other counties that have been nominated? Will they get on the All-Star 15?
Yeah, well, you're going to cover all of this. You're going to do a full dedicated special podcast for that. So I think everyone's going to be looking forward to the detail that you're going to be able to offer as well. You know, just recently, I mean, there's a couple of articles that, Nadine, did you see the article there a couple of weeks ago from a Dublin player who mentioned the issue around wearing the skirt?
Yeah, Eve O'Brien. Very honest interview, very frank. And I think the tone throughout was a tone of frustration, really. You know, you look at the skirt rule, I suppose, I presume it's a tradition, it's across the board in a lot of sports, you know, like hockey, tennis, an American sport, actually, lacrosse, which is one of the most physical sports you play, they still wear skirts. And then looking, interestingly, badminton and boxing, they have the option for both. But I was just reading up on it during the week, and in the Olympics, they originally ensured that the girls in boxing wore skirts to make women sexier. That was the premise behind that. But I think a lot of sports it is tradition. For me, I would feel playing in a skirt, it takes away a degree of like legitimacy for women as athletes. And I think the WGPA possibly have a route to come in here, an opportunity to maybe ask the players, you know, I know Eve came out and said, you know, she feels it should be changed, but maybe ask the players their opinion. Let's not have this as a central council delegates voting and deciding. Why don't the GPA perhaps do a survey on their members and, you know, bring that back to the Camogie Association? If it's an overwhelming, we really want to get rid of the skirts, then, you know, maybe the WGPA should work with the Camogie Association and really, really push this through. But, you know, from an outsider, I've never played Camogie, and I think a part of that I played every single sport going, and to be honest, I didn't play Camogie because I did not want to wear a skirt. So, you know, maybe that could be a thing for other young girls, that they don't take up the sport, they might go with Gaelic football instead. But definitely in this day and age, it's a strange one, you know, no more than what happened to Rena in Cork. It's definitely something they need to look at, I think.
And Lauren, what are your thoughts on it, like, you know, from a Camogie aspect?
It's a strange one for me. I've played Camogie for a long, long time, and it was never, ever a factor for me. I never saw any problem with it. I suppose when you look back at, well, why are we wearing the skirts in the first place? Like, if you go into the Coe Park Museum, you'll see the skirts they used to play in, and I don't know how they made their way around the pitch. It's beyond.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what you call it, a midi skirt or a maxi skirt. So it's obviously been a development from those days that that's what women had to wear back then, and we didn't have sports shops, we didn't have O'Neill's back in the day. So it's been a development since then, and even like from across my playing career, we started off where we just wore normal shorts, and then we wore this wraparound piece of material. That was a problem, because if that was too big, it was falling off you. You had to tighten it up, it was really heavy material, and then that progressed then to kind of a thicker, and I suppose it was an awful lot of material, but it was more sort of slip on. And then that progressed even further to actually quite comfortable skirts.
Yeah.
That I had no issue wearing. I suppose the other side of things, though, it is a very, like, innately feminine thing, I suppose, a skirt. And, like, over the past few years, I suppose, like, you know, associate women with wearing skirts. But I suppose when we're trying to even up the playing field in terms of women in sports, there is going to be some opposition who will need to wear a skirt in a female sport, if you understand me. I think that there's a couple of factors at play here. Like I guess from the comfort point of view, it's another thing that kind of separates the two from coming together as such, even just from a visual point of view. But I think what you're saying there, the idea of actually asking players what they want. That unfortunately does not seem to happen at all in both female and male sports, or maybe games. So I think that needs to definitely be utilised to see what the actual playing population wants.
Yeah, exactly.
If it went to Central Council, we're just going to be stuck with the load of keep the skirt, because everyone that's at Central Council would have played throughout their entire career wearing a skirt, and they don't know any different. So I think, yeah, definitely the opinions have to be gathered, and that needs to at least be presented to the decision makers, just to sort of inform their decision a little bit more. But personally, I don't mind wearing it. I've had no problems with it, but again, I'm not playing intercounty senior hockey at the moment, so maybe it will just add a couple of more percent to performance. I just think it might be a bit more comfortable.
It would be interesting to see what the outcome would be, because, like, you know, you could have a high percentage of people who are completely comfortable with it and would like to see the skirt stay for either comfort point of view or a tradition point of view, you know, so it would be definitely interesting. Mm-hmm. I think the Camogie Association came out there a while back, and they have their 2019 four-year development plan coming out, and apparently there was no room for any rule changes, but, you know, it's still 2018, maybe the WGPA could get on that and find out, I suppose.
And, Lauren, they're bringing in some suggested rule changes as well, and, you know, dropping the hurl and hand pass into the goal and stuff. Is that something that you think will add to the game?
Again, I'm torn a little bit on this. I think dropping the hurl, I think that's not going to take away from the game if that was taken out. It was always a skill, and I never really fully grasped the benefit of actually dropping the hurl.
Yeah.
Maybe confusing the defender, the person that you're marking. So I don't think that's going to change the game a huge amount. In terms of the hand pass goal, I quite enjoy actually seeing kind of the hand pass goal, and it's something that I really, like, it used to be in hurling, I'm kind of with you, it still is in hurling, because I suppose, like, we all like high scoring matches, and, like, Camogie's, like, it's definitely increasing in physicality, but it's just another way to, I suppose, show your physicality, you're bursting past your defender and you're finishing to the net. And to be honest, I'm probably a little bit biased. Claire did win an All-Ireland a couple of years ago with the hand pass goal in early time. So maybe we wouldn't have that to our credit if we didn't have this rule. But it isn't a rule that I think we need to get rid of. It isn't top of my priority list anyway. I think it makes the game really, really exciting. Like, when you look at the Camogie All-Ireland this year and last year, I think there's just one goal scored across the 2 days, if I'm not incorrect. We had no goal last year anyway. So I think it definitely adds an entertainment factor. Maybe defenders and goalies would have something to say about that. I was always a forward in my day. The goal was always in my mind. But I don't think it wouldn't be top of my priority list, but again, I'm only speaking on my experience. But I've always said, I'd love to see it in hurling, because again, we're not seeing as many goals in that game anymore. But yeah, that's my take on it anyway.
You know, you're a chartered physiotherapist, you're a highly active sports person, and yet, you know, you've managed to, you know, work with the media. How did you get into that? And, you know, what was your interest, or what sparked it? Was it the love of GA, or what was it?
Well, I suppose I'm from a family that basically raised me on the side of a hurling pitch. It's all I've ever known. And a couple of years ago, Pundit Arena would have approached me again, just, I suppose, that they wanted to grow their coverage, and they did want to bring in a couple of females, which was fantastic. That was back in 2015, and I had literally zero experience. They just recognised that I had an interest, and I suppose that's kind of the right way to go about recruiting, is someone that you've kind of, you can see, already has a passion, and I definitely had that. So they kind of threw me into the deep end, and I suppose you sink or you swim. I'm not sure I swam very well, but I suppose I did my best, and it's just sparked a real passion for broadcasting ever since. And I'm now trying to juggle a career in both physio and in broadcasting, so I'm doing a bit of work on regional radio as well, doing different bits here and there. So yeah, it's definitely something that you love, and you'll never work a day in your life, and I can completely agree with that, I suppose. It's just a case of now, I think over the next few years, I really am going to have to decide which career do I have.
Where you're going,
because working in sports physio, that's kind of evening times, that's weekends.
Yeah.
Sports broadcasting is evening times, weekends. So it's very difficult to try and juggle the two. Even like last year, I would have been physio with the Tipperary senior camogie team. And then on the flip side, this year, I was reporting on the Tipperary senior camogie team. So it's really interesting getting to see both aspects of it. And I suppose it gives me a really a deeper insight into the workings of a team, that maybe I can have a little bit more empathy towards why different things might be happening. And then I'm always not looking at it with the critical, I suppose, journalistic eye that I can kind of see, well, what might have actually led to that decision or to this thing happening or to that defeat or that success. So yeah, I'm definitely blessed to have a couple of different viewpoints.
And Lauren, could I ask you just in terms of critical, because you obviously would you cover men's sports as well?
Yes, I do, yes.
So would you find, even from being a reporter, and I suppose even from reading and listening to different coverage, would you feel there's a different content delivered between men and women's GA coverage, as in criticality? Like, would you feel that there's possibly, in ladies' football coverage or ladies' GA, that we're not as critical at times of the managers or of the players, just speaking across the board? Would you find that is a thing, let's say?
Oh, absolutely. So if you look back at this summer in particular, like, all we're offered is a match report. This person scored this much, this person scored that much, and that's
yeah.
If we look to, let's say, the All-Ireland football final, Dublin Tyrone, how many analysis pieces are we getting afterwards? How many pieces are we criticising Tyrone for the way they played? How many different pieces are we looking at how Dublin set up and how Dublin tried to get through the Tyrone defence? We get very little of that in females.
Yeah.
I think that's the next evolution. That's the next thing that we need to
see happening. I think it has to happen, because if we want to get this, you know, extra viewership and extra readership, we have to start being more critical, I feel, and give true coverage to GA. You know, I think it's rare you'd read that a player, let's say, played poorly in a ladies' football match.
Absolutely.
That player just isn't mentioned. Be it a top player
I don't know, there could be a couple of factors to do with that. Maybe the person that's actually writing the article wasn't even at the game, and they were like,
and
they haven't seen that extra why didn't play well. But maybe is there an element to that, I suppose, like, it's stereotypical, but, oh, maybe we can't really talk negatively about her, so she'll hurt her feelings.
I think that's an element.
Get beyond that, where, like, these are high-profile elite sports people. They don't have that, I suppose, factor or that complex. So I think the media need to just treat everyone as equals. If you're trying not to hurt anyone's feelings, you're in the wrong job.
You're in the wrong job, exactly, yeah. And would you feel as well now, I suppose, everybody seems to be media trained. Like, do you find that frustrating now as a reporter, and that you're getting the same answers over and over again? They're all, you know, they're all media trained, and you're kind of, in that sense, you're nearly churning out generic articles through no fault of your own, but you're just not getting much back. Would you find that maybe female athletes who maybe aren't as media trained, there's more of an avenue there to get real, honest and frank answers?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely when we compare, like, interviews with, as you said, male athletes that would have experience in interviews and are told what to say, but then when you talk to a community player that hasn't been instructed at all what to say,
yeah,
conversations are so honest. they're so true, they're so off the bat. You'd even hear like girls kind of laughing and going, don't put that in, like, you know, that they're, like, they're speaking so honestly. And I suppose we saw that with the Eva Brynäs a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
it's far more interesting because they don't have this worry, this fear. And I suppose there's a couple of not just that too, because they aren't maybe worried that there is going to be this sensationalist
backlash.
And I suppose the other side of things too, like, they haven't got a huge amount of, like, unfortunately, sponsorship and that to try and keep happy, or there's a couple of different factors that play there.
Yeah.
They definitely make for more interesting conversations. I interviewed the captains before the Camogie League final this year, and some of the discussions were fantastic. They didn't hold back whatsoever. They really, really spoke honestly, and it made for some very interesting listening.
Do you think, Lauren, that now, you know, that we have so many, I suppose we have a huge cohort of GAA fans who are disillusioned with men's football at the minute. You know, everybody's calling for a change and they just feel it's dying to death. Do you think there's possibly an opportunity for the LGFA and ladies football, and I suppose the media in general, to maybe tap into that disillusioned cohort? Because ladies football is so pure and the pace has, you know, it's definitely quickened and it's a joy to watch now. It's real football. And do you think there's an opportunity for the LGFA to maybe tap into that cohort and get them on, I suppose, the LGFA side of things?
Definitely. I think over the last year or so, it's becoming very apparent that the ladies football games are really of a more entertaining quality. And I've heard numerous people say that. Even last weekend, I was at the replay of the Cork ladies football final, and it was fantastic. There was such a huge crowd there, but I often noticed that a number of Cork senior footballers, senior men's footballers, were in attendance, and this was in direct, I suppose, at the same time as the Cork senior hurling final. There was at least maybe 10, 12 of them there to watch the game, and it was a really, really entertaining, interesting game. And what struck me was that it's probably because they knew it was going to be an interesting, entertaining game that they did over the senior hurling final. So I think with the introduction last year as well of a couple of double headers, that we might even see that tapped into a little bit more, that people will go to games a bit earlier, because they are going to get an interesting game with Mayo and Dublin as a double header with the senior equivalent. Like, that should realistically be getting a huge attendance for the first game alone. So I think that is an avenue that maybe the LGFA should go down a little bit more, is the double headers, because you're already getting people at matches. But if they walk into a match and it's a really, really interesting and thrilling game, they're going to be more inclined to come back or keep hope of what's going on with their own team. But yeah, you're definitely correct there.
And in fairness to the LGFA, they really try for the double headers. But in their defence, I think when it doesn't happen, it's actually men's GAA who have the final call. So maybe the LGFA have to look at other ways of promoting it in some way that doesn't rely on, let's say, the men's GAA at present. But I personally think there's a huge opportunity there. How they go about it now, we let them figure that out. But definitely there's a cohort who are annoyed. They don't like men's football anymore, so we need to present ladies' football as the alternative, I suppose.
There's a high prevalence of ACL rupture with ladies athletes in sport at the moment. And just for girls, you know, who are going to listen to, or players or athletes that are going to listen to this podcast during the week, have you any advice that you'd give them? From my own point as a coach, and the same for Nadine with Westmeath and with Nafina, like, you know, we've player welfare as a priority for ourselves and in our minds, and we're doing all we can to read and learn, you know, about how we can facilitate them during warm-ups and training to make sure that they're as best balanced as they can be to prevent chronic rupture. But, you know, acute will never be prevented in that sense. But from your aspect, is there any advice that you could give these players, you know, because it's going into off-season now for a lot of players and they've got 3 months now to get ready. You know, I know the gym work has become huge and people are spending hours upon hours in gyms nowadays. But is there anything you could just give them, just a final bit of advice there for the next couple of months as a chartered physio? For prevention?
Well, I suppose, unfortunately, like the high risk group is young females, and that's just from an anatomical point of view. So we are a little bit more at risk, just by virtue of a couple of different factors. But in terms of prevention, it's all about reduction and prevention. And I suppose if there was one golden piece of advice I would give is to, I suppose, train for what you're going to play. And what I mean by that is to not spend hours upon hours in the gym getting really good at lifting, squats, deadlifts, double leg exercises, because when you think about it, sports are typically one leg exercises. You're jumping off one leg, you're pushing off one leg, you're landing on one leg, you're twisting on one leg, you're striking a ball, but you're standing on one leg. And that's something that I see not done correctly or not done well enough in off season. So to work on single leg stability, and that's, I suppose, the number one factor. So if your single leg squats, your single leg deadlifts, single leg landing, it's all about trying to basically train up the knee, the ankle, the hip to be stable in a single leg position, because when you think about it, that's all you want to be doing when you're actually playing is landing on one leg, and there's very little double leg movements. So if there was one piece of advice to just switch the mindset a little bit, is to start working towards single leg exercises rather than double leg, because like we all want to be able to squat really heavy and deadlift really heavy, but it isn't overly transferable if we stick with those double leg exercises. So that's my one nugget of advice.
There's so that's much brilliant.
More we could talk about on that. We could do a full podcast, but if we could just take that from it, you'd be well on your way.
Check out gemevents.ie, candy carts, chocolate fountains, selfie mirrors. We got all your party needs covered at gemevents.ie, healthandfitnessireland.net. We put you back in control of your health, fitness, nutritional and well-being needs through education, advice and motivation. Check out healthandfitnessireland.net. Looking to dance the night away? Check out thelols.ie, the perfect sound for your next wedding, party or function. Great set lists, lively and sure crowd pleasers. Thelols.ie.